You've probably heard about the importance of consent in all sexual activities, but what does that really mean? In this conversation with Ms. Kitten, who is a lifestyle dom, we are going to go really deep on what consent looks like in new couples, in old couples, in kinky activities and vanilla activities. We're going to look at how to bring up those conversations, how to give feedback as things are going, and what to do if things don't go to plan. This is absolutely full of valuable knowledge. So settle down, grab a paper and pen, you're gonna love this. So whether this is your first time here or you've been here before, welcome. I'm Lisa Welsh. This is In Bed with Lisa, and you're in the right place for conversations that are gonna help you to access more pleasure in your life and have more fun in bed, because life is too short for mediocre sex. Now, if that sounds like something that you're interested in, then why not go ahead, like and subscribe, rate and review to make sure that you get the next installment and to help me to spread this word to as many people as possible. Without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation. This morning, I'm delighted to be joined by Ms. Kitten, who is a lifestyle dom, and we're going to be navigating a difficult conversation today. So Ms. Kitten is going to be helping us to understand, how can we deal with consent when we are working with a new partner, somebody we've just met, somebody who we've known a while and we maybe want to get a little bit kinky with? These conversations can be really difficult, but it's important to get them right. So Ms. Kitten, where do we start with this?
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me in your recording studio today. The whole idea of BDSM is this fabulous new market, but it's really, really scary if you're going into it with no experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not just kinky sex that needs consent. It's all sex that needs consent. And by consent, I mean an enthusiastic mutual agreement and the ability to say no. And I think sometimes, because of certain power dynamics, we're not always keen to say no, or we don't always want to give an answer as no. And I think if we look at how we reply to a normal everyday situation, do you want to come for a drink at my house? Instead of just saying, hell no, I'm not really keen on that, I will give you a 5-page essay on why I don't want to come, because I have so much work to do and I have other responsibilities. So even just in that situation, my no is not clear, and I'm not happy to give it to somebody who's a friend, and there's no sexual relationship between us at that point. It's just simply giving you an answer. So I'm afraid to use my no's even in a basic social situation, which puts me into a dangerous and safe zone. When I'm playing with a new player who I want to impress, I'm probably going to be even more weary of using the actual word no. And when I hear a no from somebody, I've got to be able to take that no as it comes and not feel like it is a personal attack on me, or that I've done something wrong, or that I need to rephrase the question. I need to also find acceptance to hear a no as much as I need to find acceptance to say a no.
That is so important. And as a people pleaser myself, somebody is trying to recover from people pleasing, I know how hard it is to say no. You always want to give an apology with it. You give all these explanations. You don't want to use the actual word. Don't want to hurt their ego. And like you said, you're trying to impress them, right? You want to be cool and yeah, whatever, go for it. But that can be so dangerous in the bedroom and definitely in the dungeon. So yeah, what can we do then? How can we make it easier?
The first idea is to make it familiar. So the first step is to make saying no easier for yourself, and it needs to be practiced in your everyday relationships. So for the next week, every time you have to give somebody an answer, try and make the answer a yes or a no. And every time you feel yourself writing that 6-page WhatsApp message back to give them an excuse, delete the whole thing and leave it as no. And then see how people relate to that answer. So once you've practiced it in smaller situations, it becomes easier to use it in bigger situations. And when you practice it with people that you know, it's then easier to practice it with strangers afterwards. But it's definitely something, we live in a non-consent culture. It's definitely something that needs to become part of your everyday life, so that when you add it to your sexual relationships and there's intimacy involved as well, you are brave enough to use it.
Okay, yeah, I like that idea. So just practicing, I mean, the idea of just saying no in a text message, no.
I want you to do it for a week and let me know how it goes. I want you to try it and see, look at it. It'll save you so much typing. Like, I give everybody the most evident excuses of why I can't come, and meanwhile it's just because I don't want to. I think that we need to make sure that our activity is always safe, that we are never going into a situation to cause harm, and that we engage in whatever activity we're in with a clear mind, and that it's consensual, that we have mutual enthusiastic agreement from both parties. And we need to be honest about that. And if you are in a situation where you find yourself saying yes when you should be saying no in the beginning, you shouldn't be evoking anything bigger or going into any bigger play. So what's happening in our community is that we have these amazing sex parties. They're really great. They're open dungeons. There's a whole lot of toys on the floor. You can play with what you want, and you can meet strangers and fulfill whatever dark, deep wish you have. But we need to just help these people negotiate so that your pleasure is most important, because you're not really going there to please anybody else. You're going to this party to please yourself. My boyfriend always says, when somebody says, is your penis big enough? He says, it's really it. I'm the only one that has to be pleased by it. So yes, it's big enough. So I think that there's something in that. I think that, you know, remembering in this whole lot that this entire situation is for your own pleasure, and then setting it up so that you are pleased by the end of it, is the most important way to approach it. So your intent must be good, no alcohol and drugs involved in the situation. You need an understanding agreement between both parties, and your ethics need to match when you're meeting this person and deciding that you're going to play with them. There's no point in deciding that you're going to play with somebody and you're totally on two different ethical sides already in the first conversation. Going forward, finding some ways to make play safe. So finding something that, if you don't want to use the word no, finding a word that says stop. So we use a traffic light system. Green means great, go for it. Orange means, whoa, I'm reaching my limit. This is not so cool. I might need you to back off a little bit. And red means stop. Red, if somebody says red to me, then I generally stop the situation. Our expectations aren't on the same page. We need to have a little bit of a non-sexy chat about what's happening. And then we need to reevaluate how we go forward in the play. And it's not a failure. It's not something that we've done wrong. My perceptions and my expectations are totally different to your perceptions and expectations. So sometimes we just need to rematch those two. And people change. You have different days. I have days where I used to be able to do 4 flick flacks. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. But, you know, and some days I could only do 3 flick flacks, and sometimes I can't even do 1 flick flack. So they're different levels of where my body's at, where I am mentally. And these need to just be assessed before we're going into something that's quite a physical play. The idea with kink is that you are playing with endorphins and adrenaline and all these great hormones that rage through our bodies, and we're finding a way to make them forefront of the experience. So we need to be aware of what's happening with ourselves and be present with ourselves. So this a lot comes back to me about self-care. So we talk about wanting aftercare after a situation. There's certain things that we need, but it's really important for me that we're going into this, that we loved ourselves, we looked after ourselves, we respected ourselves, and that we have a plan for when we reach capacity in our daily life. So I have a little aftercare wheel, and in my wheel, all my different pie pieces are different colors. And for me, they're things like a run, and time with my horses, a long hot bath, coffee with my friends, reading a book on the couch. So I have about 8 or 9 different things that I do for self-care. So when I feel like I'm at capacity and I can't manage anymore, I know that I need to take a step back, have a little bit of a time out, and then go to my little pie chart and see which one of these things fits into my day and how I can use them to make myself feel better. Because if I'm not in a good space to present myself with somebody else, I can't hold space for somebody else, and they can't be responsible for that. So it's really important for me that we start off with the self-care, and your self-care needs to contain a few things. It would be really bad if all I did was sex and horses, you know, and I couldn't have sex, and then I couldn't get to my horse, my whole world would fall apart. So I need to just fill that self-care wheel with things that, with a variety of things so that I have different options and different choices depending on where I am. And it's important that I am realistic about that capacity and what I can then offer to somebody else. Because if I'm not being realistic about that, my expectations after sex or after the play that I'm going to have are going to be negative. I'm going to feel resentful. I'm going to feel uncared for and unloved. If there is no way of me loving myself beforehand, I can't expect somebody else to provide that for me. So my aftercare, I can ask for my aftercare once I've been able to explain what my self-care is, and I'm aware that I've come into the relationship as a fully fledged human being with nothing lacking at that point. And if I have got something lacking, I need to be honest about it up front so that this person has an idea of how to deal with me afterwards and what to expect from me afterwards. So I think that's quite important. So I think coming into the conversation, being aware of yourself, being aware of what you need, and being aware of what you can handle and what your capacity is, and then how to fix things when they go wrong for yourself is really important. Because I think a lot of these relationships have amazing plays, and then the aftercare is not what we need, A, because we haven't asked for it, and B, because we're not able to give it to ourselves because we haven't really asked ourselves what we need out of the situation.
And so you haven't then been honest. You're not being honest with yourself about what you can take. You're not being honest with the other person about actually how much capacity you have left. And I can see how this is extra important when you're with somebody new, because it's important to have that conversation, right? Like, how stressed are you right now? Like, are you feeling in a good place? Is there something lacking? Otherwise, it's not fair on either person if suddenly you go into this downward spiral. The other thing that I wanted to ask you then, you mentioned this thing where you said no one is responsible then for filling up your need if you're not able to provide that self-care for yourself first. How does this work in like a dominant and submissive kind of relationship? Is the dominant person not responsible for the submissive? Like, how would you say to navigate that situation?
Lisa, I think it's all about communication, and it's all about how much intimacy you have in the relationship. So coming into the relationship, I'll give you a very practical example. I'm going to play with one of my needle bottoms. I'm a fetish artist, so my greatest thrill is to stick 200 needles in somebody and then string them up on strings. But in order to do that play, I need to then negotiate who's going to look after this girl after I've pushed her endorphins through the roof and she's crashing 24 hours later. And I think it's definitely based on communication. And I think that that's something that you would need to discuss at the beginning of your relationship. So what I do with my needle players is that I make sure that they have their significant other, their partner involved in it, so that I'm not responsible for that emotional drop, and that they have somebody next to them and they're going to drop. I'm going to force their body to produce endorphins and pain response and a whole lot of adrenaline. And when that is all finished, there's going to be a low and it's going to be lacking, and it's completely normal. It's not something that they are a weak person and feeling, and they're going to need certain things when that happens. I'm not able to offer that to them because I'm not in a relationship with them where they're living in my house or I have access to them 24 hours after the scene. So I need to know that they are able to cater for themselves and care for themselves. So in my place, I always make sure that there's a significant other, that there's a partner that is aware of the risk involved, aware of the play, most of the time present in the play with me and the bottom, and that this sub that's with me is then able to go to this partner and get what they need from an aftercare point of view, because their body is going to feel tired. They're going to feel like they've run a marathon. They're going to need support like you would do after a sporting event. And then you're going to need emotional support. The whole idea of feeling tired and a little bit sad because you've used all your happy hormones, you know, you're going to need to refill those boxes. So you need to have a plan to refill those boxes before I stick 200 needles in you, because otherwise we're going to be in big trouble.
So everybody is responsible for fulfilling their own needs.
Everybody's responsible. And then it's part of communicating it up front. So if you and I are going to do needles and you need 2 hours of hugs and a hot bath afterwards, you need to be able to ask me for that beforehand, so that you are sure that I can provide that for you before you get on my table. There's no point in you thinking it in your head and not communicating it. So it's something that definitely it needs to be brought to the forefront in the negotiation before. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about consent, we talk about this mutual agreement, this really enthusiastic yes from both parties. And then we talk about it in a negotiation, not just a yes or a no, but a more specific detail on how things are going to happen, why they're going to happen, what's going to happen when they happen. And we decide how much of what you want, how much of what I want, and what our needs are after the situation as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that negotiation then is obviously mutually agreed, and then you can kind of move into the scene.
Correct. And so the bigger the play, the sort of longer the negotiation would be for me, the more weeks we would spend on doing it. Because my play is sharp play, so I play with sharp instruments and I quite like blood, I'm at a higher risk on the sort of kink scale, and I need to be a little bit more careful about my negotiation because I'm playing with things that could be life-threatening in the long term. So I need to make sure that certain things, like my players have medical aid, that they are, have had an STI test, that we are both, that I provide my players with an STI test, that they know that there's no risk for me, or if there is a risk, that it's a mitigated risk. It's a risk that's been discussed and declared honestly. And you forget these things and you don't always pick them up, and you get better at it as you play more. Mm-hmm. And every bad play I've had in my life is a play that I haven't negotiated. So there's definitely a lot to manage expectations and perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think even just by me saying, like, Lise, let's do a needle play, your idea in your head and my idea in my head are so vastly different that we need to be able to marry them so that you get pleasure from the needle play and I get pleasure from the needle play. Okay. And afterwards we still friends.
Okay, I like that. Okay, and then talking then about the dangers involved, right? So you've saying you work with needles, which obviously there's a lot of risk. Then is it up to both parties to understand the what you've done to mitigate that risk in terms of cleaning the equipment, making sure the equipment is adequate, ensuring that you know what you're doing with it? I mean, even things like choking, for example, right? Ensuring that you know how to do that properly, because there is so much risk. There is so much danger. Like, whose responsibility is it to keep things safe during the activities?
Look, as a top, I take my responsibility very seriously. So I would always go out of my way to gain as much knowledge about the play as I could, to research it as much as I could. And I would share whatever knowledge I get with whoever my team is for the play. Obviously my plays are quite big, so I'm never really playing one-on-one. I would always have a bottom who would assist me in the dungeon. So I'd always have a second. You can get tired, you can get focused on one thing and forget another thing. So I like to have another set of eyes from that point of view. And I like everybody in that room to understand what risks are involved. So for me, a play would involve setting up a group and then sending the group as much information as I can on the actual play, on my process, on the equipment that I'm going to use. For me, it's a huge red flag when my bottom says my top's going to handle it, she knows what's going on. The right. Bottom must be just as aware of the risks involved. And I want to play with someone who is responsible for themselves. So when that person then researches and sends me information and asks me questions, instead of just blanketing me with the responsibility, it means for me they're a far safer player and it's somebody that I want to engage with more. So the person that trusts me entirely and blindly, I love you dearly, darling, but I'm probably never going to touch a penis. The person that asks me a million questions and that has a responsibility for themselves would be the first choice of player.
Brilliant. And so how then would you navigate that particular part in a new situation? So you've just met somebody, maybe at a party, and you want to engage in some dangerous play together. How can you make sure that you are being as risk aware as you can?
So at least I put a little card together I'll send you a copy of it and you'll be able to put it up online so people can print it. And I've got a play box that you can order one of the cards laminated that goes in your wallet. And it's just got 16 questions on it. And these 16 questions are the most relevant to my players. You can change them for your players. There's no set rule book on this, but these are the 16 questions that I find are non-sexy and that need to be asked at the start of any intimacy action. So I find I now use them like in more like mundane things, like negotiating work with clients, or even negotiating going to my in-laws with my boyfriend. Like I even use that and the physical check-in. But I find that they just provide a little bit more knowledge of the situation and take away from the very fizzy idea that this is sexy and fun. And yes, they can be considered non-sexy to start, but once you've clarified all of that, you have a better level of intimacy with the human being on the other end. Yeah. And you're able to provide for each other's needs, which I find incredibly special. So it's not just to preconceived ideas stuck in each other's heads. It's actually a unit, and you've produced an art piece by the time you finished, and you have a level of intimacy that you didn't have before by asking these questions. And I think also by the time you've got to the end of these 16 questions, you have a fair idea of that human being's ethics and where they are and if they match with you. And it's okay, they don't all have to match. We don't all have to be the same.
That can work. Even if it feels unsexy, it is really important when you're first meeting somebody to actually have those conversations, get clear on what they know, get clear on what you both want so that you can move forward and actually have fun together. Because as you said, pleasure is the ultimate goal in this. Everybody's pleasure is more likely to happen if you're both on the same page.
And I think in a BDSM relationship, there's always a power dynamic. There's always somebody who is more respected or more highly thought of than the other person. And I think you've got to be careful. That's fabulous. And that's an incredible play. But that's exactly all it is. It is a play. I think there is a way of taking the power dynamic out of the situation and just experiencing the kink. So just experiencing the needles, not making it a play where I am your dom or you are my sub. So we're two equal human beings and you're just experiencing the feeling of needles. And I think once you've experienced the feeling of needles, then we can decide if you want to consent to doing it with a power play dynamic. So I think kink is really important, but we need to divide kink, and you cannot consent to something that you haven't done. You can say yes a million times, but until you've actually felt the sensation, the yes is not an honest yes for me. So I think being aware of your limitations, understanding what you have the capacity to say yes to, is really important. It doesn't mean that you can't explore this with me. It just means that you have no experience. So we can't add layers in that situation. We need to focus on the task at hand and do the task so that you can feel what your body's reaction to that is, how you feel emotionally, how you feel mentally, how you feel physically. And then we can put that together at a later stage with a play and build it up. But there needs to be no power dynamic in that for me. There needs to be a simple play space where you're allowed to explore, and I'm then, as a skilled member of the team on that side, giving you the time to explore and to understand the feeling that comes with it.
Okay, so are you suggesting then in a new relationship, and we're using the word relationship even for a hookup, I think, right? So if you've met somebody new and you haven't got, if you haven't had experience with doing this particular thing that you feel like doing, then you shouldn't do that on the first hookup with somebody. Is that what you're saying?
Lisa, I'm saying that if you are going to do it, that then you need to just divide it a little bit. So just remove the sexual connotations from it. Just remove everything else and just focus on the actual activity. So if you've never had a needle, I wouldn't make it a sexy needle play. I would just let you feel six needles going into your skin and then feel six needles coming out of your skin. If you loved that and it was something you really enjoyed and you found that you managed that really easily, we could probably aim for 20 needles and maybe we could make it a little bit more sexy next time, because I know that you would be agreeing to it because you actually enjoyed the needles and not because you enjoyed the sexy side of it. And I think you've got to be careful when you add sex to anything in kink, because it's like adding strawberry flavoring to fizzy water. You can't remove it afterward. And you need to have an idea of how that actually feels without concentrating on being wet at the same time.
Oh my word, that was such a great analogy, and it does make a lot of sense. Thank you. That's so clear. So if you're with someone new for the very first time and they are an expert at bondage, but you've never been tied, then yes, you can go ahead and agree maybe to let them tie you up in a really chilled out environment without the sexiness. I think that is so smart, because next time you can say yes from an authentic place. Like you said, you know how that feels. Now you may be ready to add in the sexiness or add another layer before we just go in fully in and then we're like tied up and then all of a sudden we're not happy and we can't say no because we don't know how, and then all of a sudden it's a big problem.
I find this constant communication and the check-in when I first started in BDSM. So the idea of keeping asking this person on my table whether they were really enjoying this, and they kept giving me the word green. I found that quite sexy, to be honest with you. I found it quite rewarding to be told that I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So I use the road traffic light system. So if it's good, it's green. If it's not so good, it's yellow. And if it's bad, it's red. And not bad, or if you're not enjoying the situation or you need to change something or it's too much, it's a red. But the green's quite cool from a top perspective. I really enjoyed getting some feedback, and I really enjoyed getting to know that it was hot for the other person, or it was good for the other person, and I was doing the right thing. So I thought I wouldn't enjoy it in the beginning. I thought, geez, what a pain to keep asking, you know, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And my boyfriend's so cute, because the greens get like slightly like little mousy words, and he's like, green, green, green. And it's quite hot, actually. He's actually telling me, he's not very communicative, so he's actually telling me that this is really fun and that he's really enjoying it. And that feedback from me makes me feel empowered. And yeah, it makes me feel sexy as hell to know that I'm able to please him and I'm getting some response. And I think a lot of the time in sex, we don't respond and we don't voice what we want. And the whole idea with BDSM is that we're looking for our own pleasure. And your top wants to know how to better the situation and how to improve it for you. So these little green guides on the side are actually really positive. And the exercise is really easy. So just dump your partner on the bed and put a timer on for 2 minutes and start touching. But they've got to respond every 10 seconds. You've got to check in with them, and they've got to check back with you. So I would be running my hands down him, and he'd be going green, and I'd be maybe using a little bit more nail, or I'd be moving to a more sensitive part, and you'd be going green. And the more the greens sort of evolve, the more I evolve in the situation. And I find that he then gets the pleasure he wants, because when he says orange, because I'm tickling him under the armpit, I move away from that because I don't want the play to stop. And I look to rather get a green response. So I'm sort of trained to look for his positive responses. And as it gets sort of more intimate, and we've been playing a little bit longer, and we sort of know each other a bit better, yeah, I don't need the word. I can see his body language that I'm now associating with the green response. And we have that intimacy, and I can read him. But reading a stranger is really hard. So being able to put this into words for them is really responsive. And then swap over, then put the top on the bed, and at the bottom play with the top, so that you guys have an understanding of how that feels to be in charge, and then have a bit of a discussion afterwards about, you know, how did it feel to be the top? Was it the longest 2 minutes of your life? How did it feel to be the bottom? Were those 2 minutes over so fast that you just wish they would continue? And debrief the situation a little bit so that you have a better understanding of each other's body language and what you want out of the situation.
That's a really simple thing to add into play for the first time that you're together. Like, and there's no emotion. There's not so much emotion in those words, green, orange, and red, like as yes and no, right? So you can say it with more freedom. It's a great exercise to practice. I think that's fantastic. Thank you for including that.
So the idea of this sort of the same play, this play that we're both responsible for. I'm quite aware that we're all going to go to a party and have a glass of wine. But the question that you need to ask before the play is this something that we would do without the glass of wine? If the answer to that is yes, then by all means, go ahead and do it. But if the answer to that is, hell no, my mother would be horrified, then you possibly shouldn't be doing it. So you just need to, you need to maintain your own level of sanity. And I think when there's a lot of these hormones involved because it's sexy and it's hot and it's a little bit taboo, then we tend to do things more willingly without thinking through the consequences. So it's just a checking question to say to yourself, if we were sober right now, would we still be doing it? And if we're not sober, how can we make this safer in the situation so that we both don't regret it the next morning?
Mm. And I guess for some aspects of some kinds of play, like needles, that should never have alcohol involved.
Alcohol is a hard limit in my dungeon. I don't drink myself, so it's not something that I expect you to deal with me. It's one of my hard limits. I'm going to talk to you quickly about the difference that I see from having a hard limit and having a boundary, and what we can push and what we can test, and what's good to push and what's not good. So my hard limits are stuff like bestiality, scat, minors. Like, those are things that I'm never in a million years ever going to bend or remove the rules. They're just things that I don't even want to negotiate. So when I come into a relationship, or somebody comes to me in a relationship and says, these are my hard limits, these are things I'm not going to test. But I do have certain boundaries that I would like to push and that I would like to extend. So a needle player that's taken 100 needles and wants to go to 150 needles, but sort of has stopped at 100 every time, if we're having a good play, if it's something we've discussed beforehand, we'll push the boundary and move the boundary a little bit more so that she takes 120 needles. But it's definitely discussed up front. But it's not a hard limit of hers that I'm pushing, it's a boundary. So there are players where, or situations where you are able to explore these boundaries, but these are sort of things that I would recommend come a little bit further in a relationship where you have some level of trust and some level of intimacy with a player and not done on your first time out.
Brilliant. Thank you.
The other thing I want to say about that is, whatever you negotiate up front, enjoy in the play, but don't renegotiate while you're playing, because there are a whole lot of emotions and hormones that are flooding around your body, and you might feel that this is absolutely fabulous and that you can go for gold at this point, but your mind is not clear and you're not 100% sane to be making these choices. These choices need to be made in a non-sexy environment before you've added the strawberry pop to the soda water, and that you're thinking clearly. And a good top would never renegotiate in the situation. So I would allow room to have my boundaries explored, or have my subs boundaries explored, and give them access to be able to change the negotiation to a certain extent, as long as that was discussed up front. But during a play, if my sub said to me, if they feel fabulous, let's go for an extra 100 needles, my absolute answer would be no. And it's not the Olympics. Tomorrow is another day. We can do another piece next weekend or whatever. We're going to get to play again, and rather have respect for them as a human being and renegotiate when everybody's sane and sober. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about a bad play. Something goes wrong. There's lack of consent, or your consent is violated in a play. What do you do, and how do you deal with this? So I listened to somebody talk about Buddhism the other day, and the woman was saying that using your voice is really important. And we all have this beautiful voice. And when we tell our truth and we tell it clearly and kindly, we'll get the most response back. So I feel that all of this that happens in a dungeon is about accountability, that we should be with a partner who is accountable for their actions, and we should be accountable for ourselves. Things do go wrong. And when they do go wrong, we need to take a step back, take a deep breath. This doesn't have to be discussed in the next second. We have time to gather our thoughts. So gathering your thoughts, putting your thoughts down on a piece of paper. I always do this. I put my thoughts down on a piece of paper. I start the letter to whoever I'm having a fight with or an argument with, like, dear bitch, or hey fucker, or something like that. Like, and I write the whole letter and I leave it for 3 days. And then after those 3 days, I realize the letter's actually not bad, and I just need to remove the dear fucker from the start. And it's actually quite a good path of what's happened. But I don't need to blurb it all over social media and put it out there while I'm still feeling unsure about it, that I can put my account down and then take it to the people that need to see it. So the first person that would need to see it then would be my partner that I've been playing with, to say, hey, this is not cool. This is my debrief on the situation. These are the things I didn't like. And his response to that would then be an indicator for me on how I would handle it. Mm-hmm. Do I then take it to the organizers of the event? Do I then speak my truth on my own platform? Mm-hmm. Where do I go with it from there? Mm-hmm. And I think that we're just looking for accountability, because mistakes do happen. So to be able to sit down and say, this happened, I didn't like it, can we change it for next time? Or this is a hard limit, this is something I didn't realize was a limit beforehand. Mm-hmm. And my response to that is also quite important. When they send me something where they say, this happened, it's important for me to say, yes, you're telling the truth. I acknowledge that that happened. I agree that it was good, bad, ugly, however you want to classify it. How do we rectify that, and how do we make it better going forward? Because I think a lot of mistakes do happen, and it's about how much accountability we can take for them afterwards.
Yeah.
And part of this experience is about being two adults playing together and accepting that we are playing in a risk, in a minefield of risk, and that we are human and we're going to make mistakes.
That's so important. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
In any kink relationship, honesty really matters. It's taken me a long time on my journey to be honest with myself and to admit to myself what I love and what I don't love, and then to share that honestly with other people. And I think the more honestly I share and the more honestly I approach new players or new partners, the more rewarding it is. And not everybody's going to give you the response that you want. And that's when you can just use that little no box and tick it for yourself and move on, instead of forcing yourself into a situation that you aren't comfortable or happy with.
Thank you so much. This has been so valuable, and I really think that it can help people to navigate these play situations so that they can actually have the best time possible, understanding that there is always risk, and knowing perhaps how to deal with issues in the moment with the red, orange, and green light system, and how to deal with potentially bigger problems that might occur afterwards. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing your expertise, Ms. Gittin.
Thanks, Lisa. And if anybody's got any questions, they're more than welcome to send me a message on Instagram.
Thank you. I'll make sure that I share all of the links below. And Ms. Gittin has also shared a whole lot of resources, so that will all be in the show notes as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lisa.
That is all for today. I really hope that you enjoyed this interview. Let me know in the comments below what was your biggest takeaway. And if there's something you really want me to cover, or somebody you'd love me to interview, then let me know as well. I want to hear from you. And before I go, if you would like some more free educational content to help you to have more fun in the bedroom, then head over to my website, inbedwithlisa.com/free-resources, and you can grab my free 56-page ebook called The A to Z of Fun Sex. It is full of 26 ideas that are going to make you want to cancel tonight's plans. So be warned. Thank you so much for sticking around, and I'll see you next time.